Greetings, my friends. Thank you for returning to the Doug and Trussell Family Hour podcast. And this episode is amazing. But before we get into it, I've got to do the thing. Come see me do stand-up comedy, won't you? I am going to be performing. Friends, come see me do stand-up comedy. I'm going to be at the Comedy Zone in Jacksonville, April 23rd through the 25th. Come out there, Jacksonville. You know I'm a Brunswick boy. Come out and see me. Then I'm going back to Helium in Philadelphia, May 1st through the 3rd. After that, you can find me at Hilarities in Cleveland, May 7th through the 9th. And then I'm coming home to the La Jolla Comedy Store, May 15th through the 17th. And then after that, I'll be in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Comedy Zone. And of course, the Wilbur is coming up June 27th. I can't wait. Come out. Coming back to Asheville, too. You can find all my dates at DougAndTrussell.com. And finally, tune in to something I've been doing. It's kind of like a new weird project. It's called the Night Stream. I've been doing these streams every night. Powerful, enigmatic, and changing the world for the better. Subscribe on YouTube, won't you? Now, today's guest, holy fucking shit. You know, Brad Williams is a hilarious comedian. His newest comedy special has over 7.5 million views on YouTube. It's called Starfish. Watch it. It's so funny. He's mega famous, so everybody knows who Brad Williams is. But during this conversation, we talked about something you might not know about Brad Williams. Brad Williams was the headliner comic on a run of Cirque du Soleil shows. And hearing Brad Williams talk about what it's like to open up in front of a Cirque du Soleil audience in Vegas a few days after your dad died is one of the most poignant, hilarious stories I've ever heard on the podcast. He's a brilliant, wonderful person. If you want to connect to him, go to bradwilliamscomedy.com. He's got an awesome podcast called Height and Babble. Also, he is a road dog. He works hard out there. He tours, and you definitely should go see him live if he's coming to your city. I'm talking to you. Edmonton, he's going to be at the River Creek Casino. Calgary, he's going to be at the Grey Eagle Resort and Casino. Vancouver at the Vogue Theater. All his dates are at bradwilliamscomedy.com. Now, everybody, welcome Brad Williams to the DTFH. Brad, welcome to the DTFH, man. I was so excited when your manager hit me up.
Yeah, man. You are someone where when I see you out and I see you either at the clubs or at a festival, when I saw you at Skankfest, it's just like, I don't care what mood I'm in. If I sit down and talk to you, I'm not saying I'm going to be in a better mood, but I'm going to be changed.
That's either the nicest or cruelest thing anyone said to me.
I'm going to be changed. I my mood, my feeling, my being will be going one way. I will meet Duncan Trussell. It will go a different way. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but
I don't either.
It's an experience.
Well, man, I'm glad that we finally get some real time to talk.
Yeah. You know, because it's always like in the passing. You know, you're like doing, hey, you have spots tonight? Okay, where are you going up at?
Yeah.
Like the normal sort of comedian small talk.
Drift by each other every once in a while as we like go through our weird jobs.
Like, I just found out you have two kids that I didn't know existed.
Exactly. Exactly.
You have four now.
Four kids.
I have 1 6-year-old.
Yeah.
And so my sister and I were 15 months apart. When my daughter got to be 15 months, I'm like, how the hell did my parents do this again?
Yeah.
At this time.
Yeah.
And you have four about my daughter's age.
We span it out by a few years. Yeah. So, you know, we're not doing like the farmer style breeding where you're just like, right when the baby comes out, you're like, let's fuck. It's time to get you pregnant again. We don't do that. So how are you liking being a dad?
Dude, I love it. It's stressful. I don't love everything about it because there are things, you know, like your freedom. Like, and you and I were talking before the mics came on the air about the little things from our pre-dad days that we like try to hold on to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it is a different mindset when you wake up in the morning and you go, oh, I'm not living for me.
Right.
I'm living for someone else.
Yeah, it's
truly. Because you could say you love your wife, you love your partner, or whatever, and you live for them. You don't really live for them.
That's
because
true.
If you left, they're fine.
Fine. Yeah.
If daddy leaves, kids.
Yeah.
They're like, and especially if mommy leaves, oh my God.
Oh
but,
my God.
You know, they're screwed. So it's like, you truly are living, and every decision I'm making now is not just like, it's not, hey, if I make this joke, will it help my career? It's if I make this joke, will it help my career? And also, will it send my child into a downward spiral that they will never recover from?
Right. You got to think about that.
I do.
Yeah. Now, yeah, I think about that all the time because I've been podcasting forever. I mean, there's like years of their dad rambling about weird shit that they're going to tune into. And I don't know what I'm going to do.
I can't wait for, because you said your oldest is 7.
Yeah.
I can't wait for your kid to start doing like school projects and come home and say like, I got to do this report about American history. And then you kind of go, let me tell you the real history.
You want to know what happened, boys? Sit down. I'll tell you what happened. Mudslide, kiddo. The entire country's 120 years old. The entire planet is within reset. Tartaria, boy. I don't believe what they do. Can you turn my headphones?
I can't wait for this.
Dude,
I would please, not in a creepy way, but live stream your kid's oral report. Please, just because I want to know what the influence, because like I'm assuming that I'm gonna, like, when my daughter has to do oral reports or reports in school, I'm gonna throw in some one-liners.
Of course,
I'm gonna throw in some stuff where it's like, all right, that's Brad Williams' kid right there. You're gonna be able to know. I can only imagine Duncan Trussell's
kids. Already been doing it, and like when he's got to do little drawings and stuff.
You think that's a star? Let me tell you.
You want to see a real star? I got to ask you, and this question kind of sucks because it's like a press tour style question.
You and I are friends. It's
okay.
Fine.
Okay, great. Well, I just mean it's going to seem generic, which is, dude, you headline Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I did. Cirque du Soleil.
How did that happen? Like, so how did you get that job?
So the show's still going on. I was there for the first 3 months. Mad Apple at New York Hotel and Casino. Go watch it. It's a great show. But they came to me and said, the guy that ran the show, who started the show, he said he was trying to start a Cirque du Soleil show and he wanted a stand-up comic. And someone sent him a tape of me. And he goes, okay, that's the line where we have to meet it. And then he saw a bunch of other tapes of other comedians. And they went, nope, let's go back to the first one.
Wow.
And hired me. And when you get a call like that, like, hey, Cirque du Soleil wants you, and you're like, to do what?
Yeah.
Like, because I'm thinking, like, what suit are you putting me in? What trampoline am I bouncing off of? What cannon am I being fired out of?
Scary.
Am I going to be going into a pool? Are you playing a droplet sound when I land? Like, is that happening? Like, what is this?
Yeah.
And then they're like, no, we just want you to do you. We just want you to do you. We just want you to do stand-up.
Yeah.
Run out there, start the show, do stand up, then you'll do another 5-7 minutes. In the end, it'll be like 17 minutes total, and you're good. And I'm like, and what are my content restrictions? They're like, we're not the comedian. You're the comedian.
Wow.
Which is the best thing for a comedian to hear.
Yeah, for sure.
Because very few things are more annoying to a comedian than an unfunny person telling us how to be funny.
Oh my God. The worst.
Whether it be a club owner, radio station personality, someone else in the industry, like, well, what you got to do? And you're like, shut up. You've never told a funny joke in your life.
God.
You've never been on stage. There's a Buddy Hackett quote that I love, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, which shows how much I love it, but the quote was, never trust anyone who never walked the last 10 feet.
Wow.
Or never trust anyone who's never entered through the kitchen.
Wow.
Because comedians, we've walked that last 10 feet up performer, musician, whatever. They've walked that last 10 feet. They've gotten up on that stage. We've entered through kitchens. We've done it. We've done the whole thing to build. So we know what it is to get where we are. So when someone outside of it says something, you're just like, you never entered through a kitchen.
I know. That's such a great, the last 10, oh my God. You've never sat on a sack of fucking potatoes as your green room. You don't know what that's like.
You've never done a show at a cat cafe with different cats around. And you're like, I have to be funnier than kittens playing with toys. It's
Dude,
not happening.
Wait, you did a show at a cat cafe?
Yeah, in like Pasadena or something.
Oh my God.
Dude, every comedian has these stories. We would drive, you know, 300 miles to do an open mic or for no money. So it's like now when I hear certain young comics like not willing to do that kind of work and saying, oh, I'll just go on Kill Tony.
Right.
And it's like, first of all, get in line. There's, you know, hundreds of people every night trying to do it.
Yeah.
Then you have to kill with 1 minute. Yeah. Then you have to kill the interview, which is a whole nother thing, a whole different skill. And then let's say all that goes well for you. Let's say all that goes well. And it has gone well for quite a few comedians.
Sure.
Now you have to tour. Do you have more than 1 minute? Because you can't do 1 minute on stage. And for the comedians that have come from Kill Tony, your Fiona Colley's, your Aaron Bilal's, and there's many others that have actually done it and done it well. Well done.
Great.
I'm so happy for them. Wow, that was a rant off of a Cirque du Soleil question.
No, it's a great rant. Because, you know, I think, like, obviously, anyone who, you know, is a kid, sees their first stand-up comic or whatever, and, like, you know, I want to thank Quince for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. Trussels are breeding, and it's breeding season in the Trussell household, or post-breeding season, which means we got a new baby. And this is what I love about Quince. When you're choosing clothes for your spawn, you got to be careful. In fact, you got to be so careful that you don't do it, that your wife does it, because there's no way she's going to let you pick out clothes for your baby. It's not my lane, man. Look, by the time you get to be my age, you know what I mean? You don't want to go to us. You don't want to go to some store and shop. I don't want to do that. Too busy. I don't have time to go flopping into a store. It feels weird. It's awkward. That's why I love Quince. I don't have to worry about that anymore. I'm back at the gym. I need new gym clothes. I can't be in the gym with my stinky old gym shorts. That's why I love Quince's Flowknit activewear, moisture wicking anti-odor. And let me tell you, I need anti-odor in my life, and soft enough that you'll actually want to wear it all day. The best part is their prices are 50 to 60% less than similar brands. How? Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. Everything is designed to last and make getting dressed easy. You're really going to flop down to some store when you buy your new summer clothes? Don't do it. Wrap yourself in the same fabrics that the Trussell family wraps their spawn. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/Duncan for free shipping and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada. Go to quince.com/Duncan for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Duncan. Thank you, Quince. And those of us who became comics, we all have stories about the first time you saw stand-up and like how hard it hit and just like...
Murphy Raw.
Bill Cosby. We didn't know then.
And we didn't know.
I was a kid. I had no idea he was drugging people, man. Allegedly. But I
my whole life goal is that in years in the future or at any point, no one goes, you know, one of my favorite comics was Brad Williams.
Before we found out he's a serial killer. Oh, fucking time.
That's my whole life goal, is just to be like, you don't want anyone to be like, oh, you know, who's your dad? And your kids go, Duncan Trussell. Out. I didn't know about the heads in the cooler. Look, I didn't know about that.
I ordered them from the Chinese distributor of heads. Dude, but what you're pointing towards is that there's this entire, I don't want to say secret, but there's this entire experience of being a comedian that you can't know.
Read all the books, take all the classes, do whatever you want, listen to every podcast, and you still won't get this. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what to call it. This je ne sais quoi.
It's the back rooms of comedy. It's like the liminal spaces you go into, the hotel hallways, the zillions of fucking airports, just the weird existential emptiness that can sweep over you as you're you don't even know. So you'll wake up and like be uncertain of what city you're in, not because you're a drunk, but just because you've been traveling so much. Yeah,
the feeling of killing and destroying and being the man or the woman or whatever, and then going back to that lonely hotel room and going, I'm still amped. Yeah. That will, few things, you could never be truly prepared for that until you do it.
That's right.
So never trust someone who's never walked the last 10 feet. So when they gave me full carte blanche to do whatever I wanted, it was a challenge. Because I realized, being a comedian for Cirque du Soleil, when I go on stage for my shows, everyone's there to see me. They're there to see stand-up comedy. Yeah. They're there. They have an idea of what stand-up is. They have a rhythm in their head of how this is going to be. When people go to see Cirque du Soleil, they want actors flying out of cannons going, wee, wee. Want that.
Yeah.
That's what they're expecting. So that's what I'm walking out to. So it was almost like, even at the time I was 18 years into comedy, it was almost like going back to open mics where the audience is not there for me.
No.
So I have to win them over. And in many cases, Cirque du Soleil, they don't even speak English because they're like, oh, they're tourists and they want to just see an acrobatic show where they don't have to worry about language.
Dude, okay. Sometimes I fantasize about the holodeck or whatever. Like if we had a holodeck for stand-up comedy.
Oh, wow.
So you could – you know, if you're feeling down, you could dial in one of those perfect, like, laughing gas crowds. They laugh at everything, even things they probably aren't even funny. You know, the kind of hot tub crowd where you're like, thank Jesus these exist.
Right.
And then there's, like, you know, the original room crowd, which is, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. And those are just, that's a good way to test your material, to really know what's funny and what's not. You're not in front of people who came to see you. Mm-hmm. And that's how you tighten up. And then... then there's like, you just want to, you want to put it on like the hardest level possible. So like
sports bar open mic,
warming up.
that is the final boss of stand up comedy that you start with.
I was gonna say opening for Hitler. Like,
well, at least those people are here to see a speech. They're like.
At least they appreciate public speaking.
Yeah,
right?
They're there to see someone talking to a microphone.
Yeah,
but like sports bar open mic was always like so hard for me because it's literally there's a sports bar,
right.
There's a game on,
right.
All of a sudden, TV goes off. Drunk guy in a jersey is angry, and they're like, "Now we start the comedy show."
Oh, dude, who came up with that? Someone who hated sports,
sadomasochist.
Yeah, that's just a terrorism. Horrible.
And when I came up like in the early 2000s. So, and I came up in LA, where you know I grew up in Orange County. So oftentimes the Lakers were on a run; they were winning championships back then. That was Shaq and Kobe. So like they would turn off Laker games where guys would be furious. I know you're wearing a Spurs hat. don't worry, you guys are a great team. Duncan's like, sports?
How do you know me so well? Did you see what I just did? Did you see me just immediately?
Shut down. Just shut down. Your nervous system was like, I'm not being included.
I'm not here anymore.
But like they were doing really well, so turning those games off really got the crowd in a really bad mood, and now it's like, but you survived that, and now nothing scares me.
Right.
Now I don't, like, so.
But then Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, so now I'm normally going on after a comedian who's setting them up, and even if it's bad comedy, it's at least getting into the rhythm of comedy. Now I'm going after two guys that are literally juggling each other with their feet. It's called the Icarian Games. That's the name of the act, and I'm like, okay. So I gotta go on after that. And
it's a nightmare. It sounds like a nightmare. It sounds like you wake up sweating, like Jesus fucking Christ. I can follow these feet jugglers.
So and then here's one more wrinkle to throw into it, as if it didn't need any more. I am 2 weeks away from debuting, and my father passes away. We knew it was coming. But still, it never prepares you. And I was like, "Oh my god!" And I've got to deal with that. The crew was very cool. They let me skip rehearsals and just like go and deal and be. And this is before they really knew me. They've just met me, and we handle it. And then it's like I didn't just do Cirque du Soleil in my backyard and sleep in my bed. I had to move to Vegas. So I fly home. We handle everything with my dad and going through it, grieving. And then it's like, oh shit, I gotta go to work. And I hear my dad's voice going, do it, pussy. Like go out there. He'd want me to go perform. Like, don't miss this opportunity to grieve me or whatever. And it was the most healing, wonderful thing. A, because I got to work. B, because it's in an ensemble. Being a comedian, we talk about the things that you can never really learn in a comedy class. Being lonely from being a comedian is something no one really dives into, because you think, what do you mean lonely? You're on stage. You're the star of the show. You're surrounded by people who love you. There's a loneliness in being a comedian, especially when you're a road dog where you're constantly by yourself. I got to be part of a cast, an ensemble, and everyone knew my dad had passed. Right. Everyone knew I was powering through it. So that, to be around people that were supportive and to be there and to give me a hug afterward and to say great job, that was incredible. That I cannot tell you. There is a comedian who is also in the show. He ended up last year, so cool, getting second place on America's Got Talent, which is actually the place you want to get. You don't want to win. You want to get second.
Why?
Because if you win, you're in a contract.
Oh wow!
If you lose, you got all the press, but you're free.
Wow!
So he won essentially. His name's Chris Turner. He is a freestyle rapper. He does comedic freestyle raps, but he's British, and he's a white guy. It's insane.
Whoa!
He's so good at it. Can you
freestyle rap?
Hell no!
Me either. It's nothing. So bad.
You could give me a month to write a rap. It wouldn't be as good as this guy. And he and I really became really good friends because we were the comedians of the show.
Yeah.
And we really bonded, and he was really there for me. And so then you go out and you do a show at Cirque du Soleil, and stuff happens. Okay, like. Stuff happens at a comedy show. Maybe the mic doesn't work. Maybe the DJ sets off a track during your set. There's a fight. There's a waitress.
Fire alarm.
Oh, God, that's happened to me.
Me too.
Fire alarm. Phoenix, stand up live. Fire alarm happened. It was going on throughout the entire mall. I thought it was going to be like 3 minutes or 2 minutes and then stop. It kept going.
Oh,
and I'm like,
God.
This was early in my set. So I look at the audience that night and I go, all right, do you want to end the show? Do we want to wait for God knows how long, or do we want to make a fucking memory?
Yeah.
And they go, memory. And I go, okay. So I'm doing the show as the fire alarm is going off.
Wow.
I'm timing my punchlines in between the I'm like, okay, and do the punchline now. Like, and do that. The most math in my head I was ever doing while on stage. So yeah, I've fought through fire alarms. I've fought through sports bars. So we were doing my second segment of the Matt Apple show. I go on after a guy who's performing in something called the Wheel of Death. The Wheel of Death is essentially a giant hamster wheel.
Yes.
And it spins around like on a trebuchet or something without launching. And then he's inside the hamster wheel while it's spinning around. And then he gets out of the hamster wheel. He gets on top of the hamster wheel. He jumps rope on top of the hamster
wheel. It's insane.
It's insane. It's insane.
Yeah.
And we had a guy named at the time. It's a different guy now, but it was his name was Jose at the time. And then he's doing it, and I go on right after him. And he there's a trick where he gets off the wheel, and then the wheel spins around, and then he reaches back and grabs it, and then it flings him up on top of the wheel. It's unbelievable. And this night it flung him, but he let go. So Jose.
Oh my God.
Flies in the air about 10, 15 feet.
Oh no.
Splat on the stage.
Oh no.
Immediately, there's signs that we do that mean, hey, this, something happened. People run out. They run to him. He's like, he gets up. You know, they're walking him off the stage. Yeah. I just saw my friend do that. I have no idea how he is. And then they're looking at me like, and you're on now.
Holy fuck. Fuck that.
So I go to the microphone and I say, hey, everybody, Jose, amazing. It's called the Wheel of Death for a reason. It's not called the Wheel of, that was nice. It's the Wheel of freaking Death. How about a round of applause for Jose? And I go, man, Jose in the Wheel of Death. Mexicans really do all the jobs that we don't want to do. Kills in the room, and we're back. And then we continue on with the show. And then I come back, check on Jose. He's okay. He's great. And he performed the next night. But it was wild. There was one time where the lighting system completely malfunctioned and went down. And it takes about 10 minutes to restart it. Okay? So it goes mid-show, just down.
Yeah.
And then they go, okay, we got to restart the lighting thing.
Yeah.
And then it's an empty stage. And I go, why is there an empty stage? And they're like, well, because we have to restart the lighting thing. I go, do the mics still work? And they're like, well, the audio still works. I go, give me a fucking microphone.
Wow.
So I take the microphone. I run out on stage. There's one spotlight. Goes on me. And I go, this is normal. This is what we do.
Yeah.
It's one of the best parts about being a comedian where all I need is a working microphone.
Right.
I don't need an amp. I don't need a smoke machine. Right. I don't need a fuck. I just need a mic.
Yeah.
So I go out there. I do about 10, 12 minutes of comedy. We get the sign that the lighting thing is back on. And I go, okay, you ready for more show? All right. And I get the crowd cheering again. And then I walk off stage. There is a Russian hand balancer who is sitting there on the side of the stage looking at me. And I walk off stage and he goes, I have no idea how you do what you do. And I'm like, you're a hand balancer. You go up 50 feet in the air, do handstands on two little wooden blocks. You're jumping from thing to thing. If I fuck up a joke, okay, I've got another one. Yeah. If you slip, you're dead. What do you mean you don't know how I do what I do? The hell. Crazy show, man. Wonderful experience. Like I said, go support that show. And just to be around circus people.
Yes.
And now you think as a dwarf, I am circus people. But like, but to be around true circus people is truly remarkable. There's a woman in that cast that gets hung by her hair and spins around like a top over the audience. And I went to her, I'm like, does it hurt? And like freaking Wolverine, she looks at me and goes, every time. I'm like, God damn.
Yeah, but, man, I want to hear more about this because
it's a culture.
The circus is this old form of entertainment that is filled with the most eccentric. Like, you think it's weird to be a fucking comedian.
Oh my God.
These are like the things these people do.
Amazing.
Some of them like go way back, and it's the most obscure show.
They come from families of actors. And what was wild too is because it's an ensemble, comedians, we can get into our own thoughts and become a little bit of an echo chamber in our own head or just be surrounded by opening acts that also share our thoughts. We had Ukrainians and Russians when the conflict broke out.
What was that like?
They had to stay on separate sides.
Are you fucking kidding?
And when they worked, there was like a absolute strict, we are not talking politics. You come in, you do your shit. Like, there's performers that are literally wondering how their families are doing in a war-torn conflict. But like I said, dude, circus people are fucking different. There was the closest it ever got to a fight backstage had nothing to do with the Russian-Ukraine conflict, which was going on. But there was a Brazilian guy who was very anti the Bolsonaro, I think his name was.
Yeah.
And, you know, far right-wing politician there. And, yeah, very, very anti. And then there was another guy that was pro. And there it was – that had to be split up, you know, like – but that's the thing when you have that many people and not just that many Americans. World. All over the world. So now, you know, you got – Russians performing with Ukrainians, you got Jews performing with Palestinians, you got like different sides of the aisle, all so sorts of things are happening. It really is. It's a sort of a microclimate, micro universe where everyone just kind of has to figure out
how to get along.
But it's a beautiful thing because sometimes you get in those echo chambers and you just, your own thoughts get amplified and you think, well, this is the only way to live and you never get challenged. It's good to get challenged.
Yeah.
It really is. So,
yeah.
It was truly just an amazing, amazing experience, which I loved doing. And here's one more thing I'll say about it is comedians, we have examples of comedians that have made it. You do a sitcom, you start huge podcast, you're touring theaters, touring stadiums.
Yeah.
I can name you 13 comics off the top of my head that are touring arenas. This is an insane time for comedy,
right.
But there are examples of comedians doing really well.
I want to thank ExpressVPN for supporting this episode of the DTFH. You know what we just did? It's the funniest thing. You got to get passports for your kids, for your baby. You have to do that in case you got to, you know, get out of town quick, want to leave the country for some reason. By the way, I don't mean to seem weird about that. You just do it anyway. But it's really funny. Baby passport pictures are hilarious. Just adorable, but kind of like, you know, mugshot-like, but it's a baby. Anyway, you got to get passports for your kids yourself, and you should also get passports for your TV. And that's what ExpressVPN offers you. You might not even know this, but did you know that what you're seeing on Netflix is actually based on where you are on the planet? It's wild. If you use a VPN to access Netflix, you could say you're watching it from anywhere, just about, and it changes what you can see. It's like a magic trick. It's like the dark web, but for Netflix. There's all this stuff all over the planet. People in Paraguay are seeing something. People in Italy are seeing something. And you're just logging in directly from where you're at. Come on, man. It's as close to teleportation as we can get. Tell the internet you're in Berlin. See what Berlin Netflix looks like. I'm going to try that tonight. I haven't tried that yet. It's just weird. Netflix hides content based on your location, and ExpressVPN lets you change your online location so you can control where you want Netflix to think you're located. They have services in 105 countries in all 50 United States, so you can gain access to thousands of new shows and never run out of stuff to watch. And it works with other streaming services too, Disney Plus, BBC, iPlayer, and more. Also, here's what's great about ExpressVPN. It's so easy to use. You might be like me and you hear VPN and it sounds like you're going to have to do like your own coding or something to get it to work. It's not like that anymore. You just download it, turn it on, say where you want the internet to think you are, and it just works. Never had a problem with it. Also, it's super fast. And it's rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. I use it regularly, not just to change my location for Netflix, but there's lots of content online that you should probably have a VPN. You know what I mean. So be smart. Stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting access to a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/Duncan. Don't forget to use my link at expressvpn.com/Duncan to get up to 4 extra months of ExpressVPN. Thank you, ExpressVPN.
Who's the trapeze artist you know?
Oh, yeah. It's like unknown.
You know what I mean?
Completely
so
unknown.
So it's like they're doing these fantastical feats of amazing acrobatic ability and strength and endurance, essentially for the love of the game.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to make mansion money as a juggler. You're not. And these guys are still doing it. So it's so amazing what they do. And it was so – I'm always – whether it be singers, magicians, acrobats, whatever, as a performer, I'm always so amazed at other styles of performing.
Same.
And I try to adopt – whatever they're doing, like, ooh, that I liked that. That's good. That ooh, that way of getting the audience. I never thought about that.
Right.
Like it's really, really fun.
Like hanging out with comics, everyone's always, you know, there's an inevitable conversation about some part of stand up, mm-hmm. some like weird tiny part of stand up. And I learn a lot from listening to comics talk about that, but that's just the comedian take. Like being around these, like, essentially, they're like superheroes. Like
they really are.
When I went to Cirque du Soleil in Vegas, and you're looking at them and thinking, like, that's the same species as me.
Wild.
And like the shit that they're doing is insane. Okay, wait. I have a question. I apologize in advance. A vulgar question.
Oh, fire away.
But the vibe I got when I went to see Cirque du Soleil, I was on mushrooms, by the way, and I had a horrible trip.
But, oh no.
Because I was afraid I was going to watch someone die. Like I'm sitting there like, if somebody like breaks their fucking neck
while
I'm tripping up here, I'm going to like, I'll have to go to therapy. But I also got this vibe like, they're banging, like they're fucking. You know what I mean? I got this vibe like everyone's fucking everybody. Was that true?
There is some truth to that. It is. They tell you, and there's meetings. It's also a weird thing being in a Cirque du Soleil show because, like,
they tell you not to fuck.
Yeah, they tell you not to fuck. Like, because as a comic, we're our own industries, we're our own business. There's no HR, there's no payment department, there's no accounting.
Right.
It's just you. So, but then you go to a Vegas show, you're like, oh, there's a real ecosystem in here and how this all runs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they have the meeting and they tell you don't fuck.
What do they say? How do they say don't fuck? They just say don't, you guys, please don't fuck?
Like, don't, they use words like fraternize, you know, like, which is just fancy for fucking.
Yeah.
You know, like, but yeah, of course, people do.
You gotta get, I mean, it's just because you're like right there in the face of death every night.
Yeah.
You're also like surging with like testosterone and like you're sweaty. Everybody's smelling everyone's fear sweat.
And yeah, and they're all really good looking.
Yeah.
Because they're all acrobats.
Yeah.
So they're in this amazing shape.
Yeah.
So everyone's gorgeous. And then in the show Mad Apple, there's also singers. And the singers were amazingly talented. The dancers were amazingly talented. Yeah, there's a lot of good-looking people running around. All running around the backstage in freaking spandex and form-fitting. And you're just like, oh, boy. All right. And so there was a thing I started to do, and I'll do this on Instagram sometimes too, where sometimes someone would change an outfit or we'd all go out afterward and they change their outfit. And now, I mean, I'm married and I never want a woman to ever feel uncomfortable. So now I started doing this thing where when I was in Cirque du Soleil, where like one of the acrobats would come in just looking stunning and I would just look at them and go, socially appropriate comment. And that meant, hey,
hi,
you look good. Good for you. You look good.
You have to be so careful.
But
man,
I didn't want to be the compliment like, hey, your tits look amazing in that spandex.
Wow.
Like, I didn't want to do that.
Wow.
So I would just go, socially appropriate comment.
Yeah. Yeah. These, I know what you mean, man. Like, this is, really fascinating to hear about, and then you add to it that you're simultaneously, so like you're dealing with so many different bizarre things around you, mm-hmm. and you're grieving
yeah.
simultaneously. And yeah. wow. so that is like, it seems, you know, grieving, even if you're not opening up for Cirque du Soleil,
right.
puts you in a kind of liminal zone. Like yeah. you are in between parts of your life.
Yep.
You're in between like reality. You're, mm-hmm. you know, someone that, you know,
time kind of stops.
Yes.
During that moment where you're like, because in the moments of grieving, nothing matters. Nothing matters.
Nothing.
Because, you know, you don't care about that call that you missed, that email that you've been putting off, the bill, whatever. You're just in a state in between existences where you're like, there was the before, there was the when my dad is alive, yeah. and there is the when my dad is no longer here, yeah. and right now I'm somewhere in the middle.
Yeah,
I don't know how, like, when people do the funerals like 3 days afterward, like, I think, I don't know if it's Jewish people that have to do it like 3 days afterward or 4 days
I'm
afterward,
not sure.
But some other religions do something similar. I don't know how you do that. Yeah. I don't know how you do it in 4 days. We did a celebration of life for my dad, like, I think like 2 months.
Yeah.
After he passed, and that was, you want to talk about the hardest set I've ever done.
You did a you did a set there.
Not a set, but like,
yeah,
it's my dad, so
yeah.
I ran the event. I was the main speaker, and that's the hardest thing I've ever had to do.
Yeah. And it is what, but to get back to your observation about like 3 days, you're already doing the funeral. It's like, you're saying, because, and this was my experience too. Mm-hmm. It's like the idea of doing anything like productive in the days following.
Seems asinine. It seems so dumb. Yeah. Why would I take the trash out? My dad's dead.
Right. I mean, it's almost like it's a coping mechanism to force, like, it's like people who do that understand mm-hmm. that you are about to get sucked into deep fucking water, and
really
better to be in action than inaction. Better to be doing stuff.
1,000%. And there's moments, like, I remember when, you know, going to the house and essentially have to go through dad's stuff and like figure out what stays, what goes, and several times just lost it while going through shit and just was like looking at my wife going, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't do this. I can't look at his things that I saw in his office for years and all of a sudden be like, away with that. Like, it's like I understand now, and a little bit sympathetic to the hoarders, because you never want to put anything away, and like throwing away something or giving away something of your dad seems like, well, I'm giving away a part of him. This means I'm not loving him anymore because I'm casting him aside, which is the exact opposite of what I'm doing. So, yeah, there's a lot. Oof, it's fucking deep, man. It's fucking deep.
And there's even though, like, this is one of the most monumental events in a person's life,
mm-hmm.
zero mm-hmm. training for it in the West. No, not certainly not in school.
No,
they're not going to teach you. Here's how you do. Here's what's going to happen when your parents die.
Yeah, it'd be funny if you. It'd be funny if there was like a class for. All right, here's what you do when your parents die and you loved them. Here's the other one. and the best for anyone who's going through it, or about to go through it, or whatever, because you will go through it at some point.
Yeah.
The best advice I ever got, and I think this is truly beautiful, is the grief will never go away. You're never without it.
Right.
But you don't want to be without it.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I am lucky enough to have a father who was there for me, loved me, supported me, did all of that. And so it hurt like hell when he passed. And that pain is a reminder of the love that I was fortunate enough to experience in my life.
Yeah.
So anytime I have that grief, anytime I'm having a down... Dude, I was listening to a podcast a few days ago, and one of the hosts called his dad while he was on the podcast. Not to have a moment, just to fuck around with him.
Yeah.
And I burst into tears, just burst into tears, driving my car. I had to pull over. Yeah. And it's 6 years ago, my dad. Four years ago, my dad passed. And I'm still just like having this moment because I'm like, I can't do that. I can't call my dad and just have that joke moment. And when I realized that, oh, I lost it. So yeah, the grief still comes back.
Fuck yeah, it does.
But when it does, like I said, I just go, hey, this is a reminder that you had a hell of a dad and right. a hell of a childhood and a hell of a life because of him. And how lucky am I to be able to feel this pain?
What did your dad do?
He was a lawyer.
Okay.
But he was a defense attorney. You know, kept people out. That was, you know, some people that deserved to go out and some people that probably deserved to be in.
How did he react the first time when he realized you were going to like go for it as a comic?
Oh man. It was very strange because I was 19 years old and I essentially dropped out of college with a year to go to do stand up.
What were you studying?
Communications.
Okay.
We didn't lose a cancer cure. You know, I look at Dr. Ken and I'm like, you're a doctor.
Yeah, right.
We need you.
Right.
Like, we need you to do that. Like, that's a valuable skill. I was going to be a sports announcer or something. Yeah, like, okay. Whatever. Yeah. But then,
still, you'd invested for 3 years of college. Probably your folks helped you pay for that.
They paid for it.
So, and then suddenly, like, you're about to finally graduate. And your dad, what'd you say? Was that one conversation?
I told him I was going to go back. I told him, let me do this for like a year. Like, I was going to tour or something. And then I'll go back to school.
But
I knew in my head I wasn't going back.
What year of college did you start doing stand-up?
Started doing it late sophomore year, and then at the end of junior year, out.
Wow.
And end of junior year, went out a year to go.
Where was this?
USC, University of Southern California.
Where were you going out?
Fight on Trojans. Ever time I did stand up was at the Laugh Factory open mic in Hollywood.
Okay,
not a great place to do if you're for your first time.
No,
Jamie Masada, the owner of the Laugh Factory, would come up to you, buddy. I tell you what you do, buddy. You have all we do all dwarf comedy show, buddy. You have all dwarf in audience, all dwarf comic, all dwarf, and you're just like, all right.
It's like it's well intended.
It is.
You know what I mean?
He's trying to help.
But it's the worst kind of well intended. It's like when you have a benevolent heckler.
Yes.
You know what I mean? A heckler legitimately seems like a good person.
Yes. They're trying to help, or they're heckling you with compliments, which I've had. It's weird.
You can't, you in front of a whole audience, you get a compliment heckle.
Yeah.
You obviously can't be like, shut the fuck, what are you fucking doing?
Yeah, you can't do that.
You seem like a monster.
Yeah.
Similarly, when somebody comes up to you proposing a thing like that, you probably, the way you want to do is very different from the way you can react.
And it's like I was an open micer, so he starts saying this to me, and I'm like, well, he's in the business. He owns the Laugh Factory.
Right.
He probably knows more than me, so
right.
Okay. But yeah, so going up and doing any open mic around LA, there used to be a website. I don't think it's still around, but there used to be a website called chucklemonkey.com.
Okay.
And you would
click, I remember that website.
You would click on a state and it would just show you all the open mics in the state every night. It was a valuable, valuable resource.
That's what you were doing.
Yeah. Just going, doing open mics.
And because you just felt it. You were like, you knew this is what you were going to do.
Yeah. Oh, you can't. I mean, you know, you can't relate. You can't replicate that feeling anywhere else.
No.
It's unreal to create a joke, have a thought, and have an audience react positively. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I was blissfully ignorant as to the odds that I would actually make it.
Important to be. That's an important trait.
I'm always scared about young comics going up like, oh man, we have so much information now. Maybe they know how hard this is.
Yeah.
And maybe they won't try because for whatever reason, but I was blissfully ignorant. I thought, I'll do this for like
Same.
A year and a half, and then I'll be rich.
Had no idea. When I started working at the Comedy Store, I graduated, not to brag, bachelor's degree in psychology.
Hell yeah.
But I was going to go to graduate school.
Got it.
And wanted to take a year off, moved to LA, and just ended up with the Comedy Store knowing, I had no idea what the Comedy Store was.
Yeah.
Nothing about its history, no idea, nothing.
Yeah.
And so I was as blissfully unaware as you could be. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know how insane it was just to work at the Comedy Store. I didn't know how crazy that was. My dad was like, that's a legendary place. I'm like, I don't know. But So I had no idea that the odds are of making any kind of living off at stand up are infinitesimally
astronomical.
Astronomical. But I think a lot of that is you know, there's like a membrane. Mm-hmm. There's a permeable membrane that separates people who become comics from people who don't, and that's those open mics. Mm-hmm. That's all of the stuff you're talking about, the grind, the wretched grind.
Being willing to do that,
you have to be willing to do that, and you have to be insanely willing to do that, and not care that you're not, that it's not working out. You got to be okay with failure.
There's a story that I love. It's of Jerry Seinfeld and Michael Richards. Yes, that Michael Richards. And a guy comes up and is like, "Oh my God, Jerry Seinfeld, Michael Richards." And you know, you guys are great. You guys are wonderful. I love comedy. And then he says, "You know, I'm thinking about getting into stand-up myself." And Michael Richards looks up and goes, "You're never going to make it."
Bless you, Amantara, for supporting this episode of the DTFH. You might not know this, but there is a powerful psychoactive mushroom on the market that is completely legal, and somehow it's been staring at us in our faces for our entire lives. I'm talking about Amanita muscaria, the red and white mushroom, Mario mushroom, fairy tale mushroom, Christmas ornament mushroom. Turns out it's not just a cartoon or video game. It's something I genuinely enjoy using. And I was shocked that I didn't stumble upon this incredible mushroom sooner. Probably just because, you know, you make the assumption that if it's legal, it's not going to do anything. It does something. It's amazing. I love it. It works on the GABA receptors. Some people call it an alcohol alternative. It is amazing to have this combination psychoactive substance that chills you out, relaxes you, gives you some euphoria, feels good. It's amazing. And what's awesome about Amantara is compared to like a lot of the other Amanita that you might have seen at like gas stations, is that they use clean sourcing, clear education, no sketchy mini mart mushroom gummy nonsense. They're the largest importers and exporters of Amanita in the United States for a reason, and they've helped over 50,000 plus people find this mushroom. They also carry other plant medicines, but Amanita is really their thing, and it shows. If you're curious, you can check them out at www.amantara.com/go/Duncan and use code Duncan22 for 22% off. I recommend starting low, seeing how it feels for you, and just treating it like you'd recommended something to a friend. Curiosity and respect. As they say, you can always take more. You can never take less. Be careful, kids. And I truly love it. It's amazing to have a nice, legal, psychoactive mushroom on the menu. So, go to amantara.com/go/Duncan and use code Duncan22 for 22% off. Thank you, Amantara.
And the guy goes, "What are you talking about? Like, you don't even know. You don't even know if I'm funny or not." And he goes, "Because you said the words, 'I'm thinking about doing stand-up comedy.' If you're a comedian, you have to do this."
Yeah, you don't think about it.
You don't think about it. If you thought about it,
you won't do it.
You wouldn't do it.
Not in a million years.
No, why would you?
No one in their right fucking mind would do that.
Why, as an open mic young comic, would you go up in front of a room full of strangers and say, "You know what? I have no experience doing this, but for about the next 5-10 minutes, all y'all shut up. I'm the only one that's allowed to talk." Yeah. That's an insanely narcissistic feeling.
Incredibly, incredibly insanely narcissistic. And you're surrounded by insane narcissists. Yes. And you're in this cauldron of madness in the beginning. And you get moments like the one you had with Masada and countless other moments where people claiming to be experts in this or that, grifters. Like, God, think of the people you run into, or God help you, the elders of a stand-up comedy room. Yeah. You know what I mean? People who act like they're master comics because they've been doing open mics for 5 years.
My very first open mic. I'll never forget this. I showed up and there was a guy there going, "Hey, looking at me going, I've never seen you before. Is this your first one?" And I go, "Yeah, it's my first open mic." And he goes, "All right, man, no problem. Just talk to me. Ask me any questions you got. Hang with me. Do what I do. I've been doing this open mic for 15 years. And I go, "I'm not doing anything you do. I don't want to be here in 15 years. He's like, he just said, "Don't worry, I got you." And it's like, "All right, I'll do everything you don't do.
You don't do."
Yeah, it's like, and then he goes up and bombs. Of course he did. But course. Yeah.
It's your first day in prison, man.
Like, I'm not trying to get here. This wasn't the plan. I'm not going to be the king of the open mics. I wanted to, you know, go on and do stuff. But yeah, back to your original question. But then as soon as I started getting regular work and making a living, my dad was like all about it. Yeah. All about it.
What about your mom?
Mom was a little more like,
yep.
Because, you know, it's putting yourself out there.
Same.
I remember one time when I was shooting my first special, Fun Size, my mom was in the audience. And at one point during the taping of that special, I totally blank. I'm just like, oh, I have no idea what joke is next. And this is when we shot at the Libero Theater in Santa Barbara, California, and it was like half full. We moved the audience around, so it's a camera trick, so it looks full. That first special, Fun Size, that is not a full theater.
Wow.
It's not like my brand new special, Live on Short Street, which is currently airing on my YouTube channel. It's
good. Nice.
It filmed in Lexington, Kentucky, where we did it over two nights, and both shows sold out.
You're selling everything out now.
Now it's great, but like back then. So, but my mom is there, and I blank, and we only... because it's half full. I got two shots at the most recent special. We, you know, one shot. So I'm going, all right, they'll let this out. And I tell the audience, hey, I just forgot what I need to say next. Hold on. I'll get it. And then as I'm thinking, I'm going, oh, shit, my mom's in the audience.
Oh, no.
She's so nervous right now. Because she's nervous for me.
Yes.
Like, and so I started talking to my mom from the stage. Like, hey, Mom, I'm okay. I'm just letting you know I'm okay. Like, I'm fine. I'll get it. This is part of it.
They're gonna
edit all this out. And then, like, as I'm talking to her, I go, "Oh, right, that joke." And then, I go right back into it. So, yeah, like, she was always like, now she's 80 years old. I've been doing this for 22 years. She'll call me and go, "Where are you off to this week?" And I'll be like, "I'm going to St. Louis." And she'll go, "Oh, God." Like, she just goes, I can say any city.
No.
Any city. Doesn't matter. It's just, oh, God, you're good. You got to hop on a plane. But like, she just doesn't want me to be hurt. But at the same time, like, she loves it. She knows it's my passion. She knows it's what I do. She knows I make a good living doing it now. And, yeah. So it's
all supportive.
How are
you doing being away from your kid?
Bro, she did the first. I was told this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I was told, Brian Posehn told me one. Every comic who has kids, this will happen to you. Where your kid will say something to you when you're going on the road that'll make you want to quit the business.
Yep.
And stay home.
Yeah.
And the first one happened to me last week.
What was it?
Because I had just been on the road and I just got home, and then I knew I had to, and we did a family day, and then I knew I had to leave the next day to go back. Mm. But I had to get home, do a family day. Okay, cool. And then I'm telling her, she's six, and I go, "Hey, you know, daddy's got to go to work." And then she just looks up and goes, "Again?" And I'm just like, fuck this business. Fuck it. Fuck it. Fuck it. I want to quit. I want to go home. I want to just hug my kid. I want to watch her read books. I want to take her to parks and museums and buy her a pony.
Brutal.
I want to do all that. Posehn told me, this is the worst one I've heard that his kid did to him, and I hope he doesn't mind that I'm telling the story. If not, sorry, Brian, but you're a great comic and you're a friend. But this is the kind of stuff that we go through where he was heading out and like, all right, buddy, I got to go on work. And this kid goes like, you know, why do you got to go, dad? Why do you got to go? And he goes, well, this is how, you know, daddy pays for everything. Like, this is how we, like, you know, your Xbox and your blank. Yeah. Like, these are nice things. And this is how... this is how we get it. And the kid looks up and goes, well, I don't need those things.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And you're just like, oh, bless you, kid. Oh, so kid. Yeah, and that's this life. So I'm telling you, I got 2 weeks off when I go home tomorrow, and I got 2 weeks off. And yeah, we're gonna do stuff.
Yeah, you know? Man. But what happens is, what I've noticed with myself, mm-hmm. is this kind of, I don't want to say frantic, but because you know you're going to have to hit the road again.
Yeah.
And you've got this span of time. Mm-hmm. And so then I don't know how to put it. Like, I feel like I'm overcompensating, you know? Like,
oh, definitely. Yeah. Every comic with kids is the divorced parent that when they split custody, they're like, all right, you were with me this week. We're going to Disneyland. We're going to this. We're going to buy you all the things. We're going to do all the things.
Yeah.
Like, because the comic comes home and I'm like, all right, we're going to do all the things.
And it's not fair to the mom.
No.
Because the mom's having to regulate.
Yep.
The mom's having to, like, you know, yep. do the
day-to-day
stuff. The kids have no idea. Like, without it, mm-hmm. they'd probably all be dead. They'd mm-hmm. be naked and dead.
And here comes Fun Dad.
Yeah, I know.
I get to be Fun Dad.
I don't know how to fix that. I mean, I don't know. I'm not certain how to balance it out, man.
And yeah.
You know, I'm not sure what to do about that.
That's something I go to therapy, and I'm definitely talking to my therapist about that. Like I'm going through whatever I'm going through right now. And also I'm like pre-planning in the future.
You know what? I should send my wife to therapy.
Duncan's like,
that's the answer.
Duncan's like, I'm not doing it.
What did I think of that?
I do mushrooms. I don't have to do it.
Yeah, I got to get into therapy, man. That's probably a good move.
It's you know, I'm an advocate for therapy. I was a longtime guy that questioned it and was like, I don't need it, I'm fine. And then I started going to it. I'm like, oh man. And it's made me a better father. It's made me a better partner. Conflict resolution I'm a lot better at it now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll tell people it's great. But it's kind of like, you know, you got to find the right therapist.
That's for sure.
You got to find the right one that talks to you, and you're like, oh, okay, you're getting it,
and does happy endings.
1,000%.
That would be great. Why isn't that a thing?
So there's a bit I'm working on right now that's kind of about this, where it's not done yet, so I'll do like the brass of it. But it's like, so I say heckling in comedy is a lot like happy endings in massage. It's part of it. It shouldn't be. It should not be part of it. We should not have hecklers. I should not have to deal with this shit.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have people yelling out. And massage therapists should not have to deal with guys going, so are you going to jerk me off now? That shouldn't be a part of it. And also, why did we decide on massage as where we do hand jobs? How did that industry get to it? Why that industry? I don't need a hand job when I'm getting a massage. I'm relaxed. I'm comfortable. I'm hearing calming music. It's beautiful. I'm in a beautiful state of being.
Yeah.
Give me a handy at the DMV. That's when I'm stressed. I'm stressed out.
Yeah, dude.
Shit's happening. Number five is called. I'm number 342.
Traffic stops.
Traffic stops. Hand
at
job.
At least you're getting a hand job.
At least you're getting a hand job. Think about all the shit that you gotta go through.
It's so fascinating.
You're like certainly waiting in the doctor's office.
Everyone would love going to the doctor. It'd be a much healthier
nation. Oh my god! Could you imagine if you're going to the? I'd go to the doctor 3 times a week.
I would be always, honey. I don't know what's going on. I'm feeling like I need to go get my blood sugar checked. It's the seventh time. time this week.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, like that we need hand jobs in way different places. Anytime I turn on the news, I should have a fleshlight because that will help me feel better.
Oh my God. Do you know what you just came up with?
$1 billion industry.
Fox News. Okay. So this is your idea, man.
And you got it.
Right after this podcast, you go and
LLC.
LLC, man. But
go make it.
They do have apparently these. I know this because I did someone's podcast and they had sent them these things that hook up to the internet, and so they sync up with porn. So basically, it's a fleshlight that syncs up with porn, and they're like, "You want it? You want it?" And I'm like, for a second, I'm like, "Yeah," and then I realized like, but this is connecting to some company that's going to have like a record of not just like what porn I'm looking at, but like how quickly I come into this fucking, it's going to know all these.
All of a sudden you get ads on your phone like, do you come in 30 seconds when watching porn with your fleshlight? You're like,
what the fuck?
How do you know that shit?
But dude, one of those, but that syncs up with Fox News. So when there's like, breaking news, it like pumps.
Breaking
harder.
News, war in Iran, and he's just like,
dude, I'm telling you, it syncs up with Dateline, syncs up with Forensic Files. Let's cut to the reality of
today in the neighborhood, 5-year-old kidnapped from a school party.
What the fuck? Not for that.
I tried to think of the most monstrous, horrible thing, and then I realized I transported us to Epstein's Island.
Yeah, okay, right.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, right.
We're hashing this bit out.
Oh, yeah. It's just a bit, guys. It's a bit.
It's a bit.
Trust me. These days, someone's like, oh, my God. That's it. That's what I've been looking for. You're going to see it. Someone will make this.
I hope so.
Dude, it's really.
It'll be my idea, and I won't make money off it, but I don't care.
Well, look, it's recorded here. Because, by the way, if you ever got one of those, oh, my God. Don't do it if you never do this. But you know they have what they're called, those 5D theater seats. You ever done that?
Yeah, where it's like it rumbles and it sprays mist at you and like
it's
does
like
the whole
watching
thing.
A movie in the back of a truck. It sucks.
Yeah. I want to sit here.
It sucks.
How do I eat my snacks if the popcorn is going back and forth?
My kids are getting flung out of the fucking chair. They love it, but it's the worst. It's horrible, but. I don't mean to keep fixating on this idea, but that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It can be anything. Like, why are we only syncing our fleshlights up with porn? That's the question. That's what I'm telling you, man. I feel like I'm Bill Gates.
This is the Bill Gates in the garage moment.
Dude.
we're syncing fleshlights with our porn.
Just bird sounds. I mean, what else could you sync a fleshlight?
Anything.
The sound of the wind.
Oh my God! Like the sound of the coffee maker going off in the morning.
Oh yes.
Yeah, you know, you set your coffee maker for 6:50 a.m. and you also set your fleshlight.
An alarm clock. It wakes you up.
Time to get up.
Well, sir, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I'm glad that we're ending on hand jobs.
Happy ending. Where can people find you? Where are you going?
BradWilliamsComedy.com. Go to BradWilliamsComedy.com. I'm currently on the Tall Tales Tour, touring all over all of the great US of A. And in December, I'm going to Europe. So if you're listening in England or Scotland or Norway or Amsterdam or Sweden, I'm coming there, man.
Wow.
It's going to be awesome. And of course, my brand new special, live on Short Street on my YouTube channel. Please go watch that. And I have a podcast as well. You're listening to a podcast. Why don't you listen to me do a podcast? It's called Height and Babble. It's me and my buddy JB Ball, who's a 6'3" black guy from Tampa. So we're exactly the same. And we just find weird stories on the internet and we just talk about them. We're non-political. We don't talk about sports. You'd love it. And we just find weird stories on the internet and we just talk about them.
Cool.
So that's the Brad Williams catalog. That's the kit. Watch the special. Listen to the podcast. Go see me on tour. But
links down below if you want to. If you don't want to type something. something in.
And tell me that Duncan Trussell sent you, because then I will know what kind of fan you are. And I will go, okay, this is a comedy fan. Yes. I like you. This is great, bro.
Thank you, Brad.
Whenever we talk, it's always too brief. So it was very nice to chat with you for an hour, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much.
Of course.
That was Brad Williams, everybody. All the links you need to find him are down below. Thank you so much for watching the DTFH, and thank you to our beloved sponsors for keeping food in my children's mouths. I love you, and I'll see you on the night stream. Bye.